Hello, and welcome to Girls Gone Canon Reads A Song of Ice and Fire, episode 222, Arya 2, and A Feast for Crows.
Sorry.
I am one of your hosts, Chloe.
I am another one of your hosts, Eliana. I'm host number two, if you will.
Whoa! Yeah, that was just crazy lottery. Welcome. Welcome aboard.
Welcome, and are you ready for Arya to put Needle away?
Are you ready that, like, we're at the end of Arya already?
No,
like,
this I'm is not.
Soon it. Only A Dance with Dragons to go, and I'm like, I just can't, it passed, you know, I feel like we talk a lot about POVs in advance together, obviously, because we can't reveal yet, and whenever we talk about them, we're like, oh, this is going to be so long, and Arya's blinked by, dude. This has gone by really quickly.
Yeah, I thought this was going to last way longer. I'm kind of surprised. I'm pretty sad. I've been really enjoying the Arya chapters. And yeah, I can't believe we're almost here at the end. And I think part of it is like, because you think of her POV as being in all of the books, but then you remember that she has just, compared to the first three books, so few chapters in the final two.
Yeah, and I know that if George had his way, and if Paris had her way, that would be different, right? That would be way more. He could write novels and novels upon stories of Arya, I'm sure, especially in Braavos. He could write probably another trilogy. Please don't, but not now. You know, I mean, come back to
not,
that idea.
Yeah, not yet. But
not yet, not yet. Let it sit. But it's really rich stuff, lots of rich history and lore from A Song of Ice and Fire's world coming in here. A lot of heart, a lot of sadness, and those chapters gapping really does keep you coming back. You're like, okay, where's my next Arya chapter? I think that's like some of the excitement of the books when you read them for the first time, right? Like flipping and being like, oh, when am I going to get another blank chapter? This character I'm starting to like. When am I going to see so-and-so's chapters again? I love that feeling. So I remember that with Feast for Arya.
I do feel that way, actually, about our next POV. When are we going to get another chapter of this this character? So
I'm excited. I think our next POV is going to be really fun. And you know, there might be a little bit of them in this chapter. I don't know that we're going to call it out directly now that I'm saying it up top. But they're all over the story, too, I guess. I don't know. I'm very excited because, you know, we're in the bottom of the POVs, as a lot of you have realized. We're at the end of the POVs. We have only got, like, what, 4 or 5 POVs left, depending on how you count them, I guess. Some of them are big, some of them are small, but no POV is small in character to me.
Yeah, and I think, have realized that as we've come to this point, like, there are characters that I would have been like, oh, yeah, small POV, right? Like, for example, Arya, Hota, even Victarion. But I feel like I got a lot out of doing those character rereads.
I actually loved our Hota run and that Aerys and Jaime. And I loved that section of time. That was so long ago.
Yeah.
I would love to revisit them someday. And maybe we'll do refreshers for TWoW on many characters before TWoW comes, right?
Yeah.
Sansa Stark, all the way down.
Well, I'm just like, TWoW. And I've said this multiple times, definitely we'll do one on Barristan, but yeah, I really loved the Hota chapters.
Me too.
If anyone asks us, like, our favorites, that's going to be there, like, not like as in favorite characters, but favorite runs that we've done.
Yes, 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 yes. Because it is different, right? Reading the books in a normal fashion versus this fashion obviously has been a very interesting 5 to 6 years. Whoa, 6 years. Whoa. It's been a little crazy. So still a couple years to come on the main POV cast. So don't worry. And who knows if TWoW comes out, as we said, that'll probably chain us back to this desk, to this microphone for a little bit of time to come. You just never know. And hey, there's some other stuff coming in your future, ASWAF related from us. We are starting to plan the hot D season. We're still waiting for the release date. So just know that things are flexible, things are fluid, things are moving, but we've got plans on plans.
I mean, plans. Chloe, tell us about some of your plans, right? Because obviously we're going to be covering Hot D and those episodes. And I think we've already warned you all before. Please remember, we will be pausing the Reread podcast for our personal sanity. It's our podcast and also our mental health. So we are going to do only one episode a week and it will be the Hot D episodes. But what about leading up? What people really care about, what the critics want to know, is what's going to happen to unleash the D? Will we unleash NED this year.
Yes, the critically acclaimed podcast, yes. Unleash the D. Will it be returning?
Award-winning podcast.
It has won so many awards. Will it be returning, you are asking me? And the answer is, it's a surprise. No one knows.
A surprise D.
And that said, we do have some content we can tell you about leading up to that for now, right? As we get into the spring season for Girls Gone Canon.
Wow.
That's summer. That's summer. You know, yeah. That's the long summer ahead. I don't plan on throwing myself down the stairs this year for Hot nice, D like nice. I did in 2022. So it's important that we do one a week, I think. Yeah, very important. So we'll come back to all that scheduling. But up next, this month for Patreon, it is, oh my God, we're releasing this. It's end of the month. April's upon us. So here is your shout out that you should be downloading, streaming The Hunger Games, Act 3, Part 2, The Victor. Yes, Part 2. Glossing over that and who we are as people. Part 2, The Victor. We are finishing it up, wrapping up that first Hunger Games book for patrons in the Stranger tier and above. That's $5 and up. And if you're not interested in The Hunger Games, you should still log on to patreon.com/girlsgonecanon for hours upon hours upon hours of bonus content like A Song of Ice and Fire, George R. R. Martin's other pieces, his novellas, novelettes, etc. And next month, in April, we will be releasing Mercy. Mercy, The Winds of Winter, the unpublished chapter, Arya chapter, that George put out from The Winds of Winter. That will be at patreon.com/girlsgonecanon, where you can find the other Winds of Winter chapters from characters we've done in the past, like Elaine or Ariane, Barristan, who else? All of them. There's tons over there. Theon.
Yeah.
Victarion.
Yeah. The Forsaken.
Yeah, The Forsaken. Exactly. We've only got one other, I think, left after this of unpublished Teemo chapters, right? Yeah. And that's Tyrion. And that one's interesting because it's piecemeal.
Interesting. So then, you know, hopefully one day we'll get like a whole slew of Winds of Winter chapters.
Yeah, I can't wait till they're published, man. It's going to be really cool. It's, you know, like, I just know.
Under your chair.
I just know. College is going to be so cool, man. Look under your chair. And hey, in May, I believe we will be possibly taking a trip back to Braavos. So watch out for that, patrons. And that's not the only thing that patrons get.
No, it's not. So if you are a patron in the Thunder tier and above, you get access to our Girls Gone Canon Discord, where we have fun channels. A lot of people, again, relaying their CK3 runs. And also, once a month, you get access to our happy hour / brunch, brappy hour. This month has already happened.
Yeah, if you're listening to this in the present tense, we have had brunch. If you're listening to this in the recording tense, we have not yet had brunch, but I bet it's a real gas because it always is. We always have the most fun, whether it's vibing and doodling, as we did last month, or playing Jackbox games. So please come hang out. It's just 2 hours of vibes, mostly. You can vibe, you can have camera on, camera off, or you can even have audio off. You could just be lurking, hanging out, be in the text chat that comes with the brunch channel. A lot of people like to just text chat, which is fun too. You know, listen to your friends. It's like a casual podcast of all your buddies being goofballs. And next month, in April, we're doing the unthinkable, and we will be holding our next brunch on 420.
It's actually the day that worked best for our schedules. I'm not going to lie. It actually legitimately is.
As we said last week's episode, please do not at us. We do not approve of drugs.
Drugs are
in
bad.
This podcast.
Yeah.
They're bad.
They're bad for
as
you.
As we talk about drugs constantly, they're bad for you. So that said, it will be 420. Blaze it. 2 to 4 ET. Not Eliana time, but kind of Eliana time. And that's Thunder tearing up, like you said, Al. You said that shit.
Yeah. Well, speaking of timing, let's take a little trip back in time. Back in time with this email and tweet a note.
Yeah. I believe a handful of episodes ago, you made a comment about Girl Scouts, right? You said, so many vows they make you swear and swear like the Girl Scouts. And Our friend Elise from Patreon commented on that one. I think that was during our episode with Warren a couple of weeks ago, actually, the Arya 13. But Elise commented on that she laughed at that very much. 5-year-old Aliana and Girl Scouts.
Yeah, I did say that. Elise is the one who I think gleaned, like, that is the vibe that Aliana at 5 years old was feeling. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. They made us, like, say all these things, this, like, whole pledge and Girl Scouts. And I was like, I can't live up to that. And Elise was like, wow, she's really channeling Jamie right there.
That's like a multi-episode threaded together comment, too. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressed. And I have to tell you, we were sitting here troubleshooting Patreon and Elise did something insane for us and joined the Discord and troubleshooted it for us without us even telling her to. So thank you, Elise.
Thank you, Elise.
For your comments, your many comments. Yeah. She's always commenting over there.
And
you guys can comment too. You know, like, come give us comments. Tell us about your pets, funny stories, your heart's desires, fire, blood, vengeance. You know, whatever they are. We want to hear from you too.
Always appreciate Elise's comments, so thank you. This was a good one as well, and yeah, thank you for fixing this problem for us on Patreon. Well, okay, testing the thing that we weren't sure was going to work, and it did. Amazing, amazing.
And what's funny is, I must add, in that episode we talked with Warren, and our friend Shiloh also just commented on Discord and said, I want to hear about the Girl Scout thing. And also, I had to do the flower baby thing in high school, so it's not a myth.
Oh, you
the
did?
The flower baby is a real thing. Yes.
Yeah. No, the Girl Scout thing, it was a really long time ago. Would you all believe it? Almost 30 years ago. And no, it really is. It was like 28 years ago now, if I think about it.
You old motherfucker.
Or 27. Either way, like, a long-ass time ago. So we're going to do the best we can to remember it. And I guess all I can relay is, you know, I guess I went to one meeting and they're, I guess, inducting you kind of in the way that, you know, Arya's trying to be inducted into the House of Black and White right now. And she's like, I can do it. I can do it. I can be whatever you all want me to be. And I apparently had a very strong sense of self at that time. I was like, I just don't think I'm responsible. I'm not responsible enough to live up to all the things that were in that pledge. I don't even know what's in that pledge. But I was like, I can't live up to that.
I mean, there's even some themes in this chapter where I'm like, it's exploitative to make a child have to say these things.
I mean, they're probably like all very good things. Hold on. It was like Daisy's, like Daisy pledge. What did they fucking tell you? Oh, okay. No, there's no way. Was that? Was it? No, there's other. Okay, here we go. On my honor, I will try. And then this one, I guess you can include or not include. I don't remember this in the pledge. To serve God and my country, to help people at all times, and to live by the Girl Scout law. I'll do my best to be honest and fair, friendly and helpful, considerate and caring, courageous and strong, and responsible for what I say and do, and to respect myself and others, respect authority, use resources wisely, make the world a better place, and be a sister to every Girl Scout. So I think this is like what they're, I assume this is what
their
I was
mission.
Asked to say. Yeah. And I was like, I can't be all those things. Which is, yeah. These are all good things to be. So I'm like, damn, 5-year-old, what was wrong with you? Maybe it was the respect authority and use resources wisely. I don't know. Or all of these, I don't know. I just was like, I can't do it. That's kind of fucked up.
I think it's a lot of pressure to put on a kid, dude.
I get
what you're trying for, but it's a lot of pressure.
I agree.
Well, I think that you are courageous and you disrespect authority. That's a problem. But you know, no, I'm just kidding. I don't
actually
think that.
That's actually one of my better traits.
Yeah, I kind of like that about you.
Yeah.
Kind of a firecracker. Aliana, I'm starting to, you know, every day I learn more about you whenever we're here, obviously. We've done this for a very long time. We've
you
been podcasting
do.
Together since, oh my God, like 7 years, 8 years now almost.
We do still learn about each other.
GGC. Yeah, so we're still learning about each other. I think that's special, and we're growing together. And I think you fit a lot of those terms now. Whether you were Girl Scouting or not. Thanks for this, Aliana and Elise and Shiloh, for your comments. Let's hop on over to that lightning round. Let's get into Arya 2. We've got a lot to crunch down in this first beautiful chapter in Braavos. But to get to that chapter, we got to start with Cersei 2, where managing a kingdom is hard, especially when your uncle refuses to be the hand of the king after you've insulted him continuously for several chapters.
I'm on episode 2 of The Sopranos. I'm like, is this related? Anyways.
Yes,
I intend to watch it this year.
Oh my god, I'm so proud of you. This is so exciting.
I'm excited. Jamie won. Jamie rejects Cersei's hand job again.
Brienne too. Brienne dons a very familiar shield and then takes on a squire.
Sansa won. Marillion haunts the Vale. Sweet Robin haunts Sansa's bed. Oh no.
Like one of those annoying little Victorian boy ghosts, you know, just the worst kind. The Kraken's daughter, Asha, prepares for her queen's moot at Ten Towers. Asha refuses Triss's advances.
There's a lot of that going on in this beginning. This is really interesting as a lightning round.
Feast is about women who don't fuck. No, I'm just kidding.
Cersei 3. Cersei has the pyromancers put on a display for everyone, incinerating the Tower of the Hand with wildfire. No one's going to have hand jobs ever again.
Oh, Jesus. What a sad world we live in.
That was what the message.
Yeah, that is actually literally that. That's going to be a fun chapter. It's going to be a fun POV. Someday. The Soiled Knight. Aerys Oakheart attends his princesses.
Brienne 3. Brienne and Podrick join up with Nimble Dick Crab.
Samwell 2. Sam realizes the cost Gilly has paid on the voyage east.
Jaime 2. Jamie schools Loras Tyrell. I actually love their dynamic.
Me too. Cersei 4. Cersei prepares to send Gregor's head to Dorne. Cersei schemes against the Tyrells, using Tyena as a tool. This could be like every chapter.
Fuck. The Iron Captain. Balin was mad, Aaron is madder, and Euron is maddest of them all.
The Drowned Man. Euron Greyjoy is proclaimed king.
Rip. Brienne 4. Dick Crab dies against the Bloody Mummers. Brienne buries him and Hyle Hunt joins the party.
Boo.
I was like,
subtle booing.
You saw
subtle
my face. Booing. I was like, oh no, gross.
The Queen Maker. Crowning a new queen goes horribly wrong.
Oof. And that brings us here to episode 222, Arya 2, A Feast for Crows. Expected to give up her past personas, Arya gets a history lesson in the House of Black and White.
Each night before sleep, Arya says her prayers. Aw, like a good Girl Scout. One day, the priest asks who the names are that she whispers, but she claims she doesn't say anything. He calls her a liar and says, "All men lie when they are afraid. Some tell many lies, some but a few. Some have only one great lie they tell so often that they almost come to believe it, though some small part of them will always know that it is still a lie, and that will show upon their faces. Tell me of these names."
Okay, I'm sorry. I think 5-year-old me could have lived up to a murder prayer. I do think I could have done that. So Arya... I think that there was something really pointed here, saying, like, all men lie when they are afraid, and it feels as though Arya's been trying to run from her fear for a lot of this arc and story, right? But she's always lying and telling herself to not be afraid, but what we're seeing now is that she has been afraid this whole time. She's afraid of being herself, because it's not safe to be Arya Stark, and she's been trying so hard to escape that fear, which is part of what's brought her here to the House of Black and White. And I'm trying to think of, like, you know, this idea of this one great lie. And I know you've got, like, some really good ones to talk about, but we know of some, but I'm trying to think of, like, other POVs that, like, have a lie that they keep telling themselves, or not just POVs. And, you know, I'm thinking, is one of those lies Arya telling herself that she doesn't need anyone else? She just needs to be by herself. Everyone abandons her. And that's a really sad narrative to carry around as a child. And then also another one has to do with, like, the lies that Littlefinger is telling himself about Sansa and about Catelyn.
I love that so much, because then you have, like, Sansa telling herself lies about Sandor.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, the ability round to just round. Really believe something. And, like, Reek and Theon is one of those too, right? Theon has been forced to absorb and live this one huge lie, and you can see how ingrained it is that, like, he does come to believe it. But yet, in a mirror of Arya's storyline, Theon is still there, and, like, ugh, fist pump moment at that end of dance. There's also, I don't know, it also feels kind of culty, right? Like, is the house in black and white trying to get Arya to believe one great big lie of, that there is no you, there is just the servant of the house of black and white. And I don't know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of like the idea of an institution owning you that we're going to talk about throughout this chapter because it's weird because they're selling her freedom, but they're not. They say they stand for liberation, and we get to some of this history as we go, but then at the same time, they aren't liberating. It's very there's
Yeah,
something
you're
going on
right.
here.
They're not. Oh my
Yeah, they're just continuing some of the systems that are going on, which we'll talk about more. But with regards to the liars, the many liars in this story, god damn it. I definitely know that the easiest one to think about here is Ned,
God.
right, with John, and a little bit of Catelyn, right? Catelyn having to lie to herself all the time about Ned and his bastard, quote unquote. Though she doesn't know the truth, but that's an interesting part of it. But yeah, one great lie, so much that they almost come to believe it. I love that. And it kind of goes back to Ned's philosophies too. Like, when can a man be afraid is interesting against men lie when they're afraid. It's a continuation, right, of his theology for his family. Ned is afraid. Ned has to lie. Ned has to start to try to believe the lie in order to not give it away. Actually, there's some really great stuff in Children of Dune about this, but with Ganima, it's very awesome. I'm in the depths of rereading Children of Dune and God Emperor, and I'm just having a fucking blast. So everything I'm like, ah, God Emperor, ah, Children of Dune. Yeah, Ned, especially, you have that beautiful vision at the Godswood that Bran gets to see, right? Where he's praying and he says, "Let my lady wife find it in her heart to forgive, let them grow up as brothers," right? And praying for forgiveness from this lie. Which is kind of what a lot of these people coming into the temple are doing, right? They're begging for forgiveness from their lives of deceit and whatever, or the deceit they've had to hold in their heart, and they want to get rid of it. And it also makes me of what he tells Catelyn, right? Especially because here he's like talking about all these facets of a man, all these faces of a man, right? And we have Ned and all these faces where he used to be harsh, or the Lord, or the Father, all these differences with him. And that line where she had asked him about Jon and Ashara Dane, and he said, "Never ask me about John. He is my blood, and that is all you need to know. And now I will learn where you heard that name, my lady." Interesting, right? Like that turn of him turning cold, like she even says that was the only time in years he had frightened her ever. So like suddenly a face out of nowhere, that's Ned's tell. Ned's tell is literally how he speaks about John to his wife. Ned's tell about John is all over him. You can always see a lie in a man if you just look at what his tells are. And that's Ned's.
Yeah, I love that because also you can see how deeply ingrained that lie is for him through his POV, right? Because he doesn't say it. He doesn't say it outright that, like, John is not his son. Like, that's how strongly he has forced himself to believe this lie for, I mean, baby boy's survival.
And for a man like him who like needs to tell the truth or else it shrivels him up inside, like it beats you up inside, like that's so hard for quote honorable Ned, who's quote, doing the most honorable thing, right? By keeping John safe, keeping him out of the fire of Robert Baratheon, keeping him out of the fire of the throne, keeping him safe as a Targaryen bastard, or maybe not bastard. We don't know because we don't know yet. And even that against, I'm rereading a lot of the Tyrion chapters right now. I've been kind of deep in them, and I'm thinking about like Jon Kahn and Aegon, right? Like Jon Kahn knows Aegon's not his son. He has to pretend that he's old Griff, young Griff, right? And he can't, Jon Kahn's not allowed to be himself anymore. And he has to pretend Aegon's his, but he knows Aegon isn't his. And deep down, he probably also knows that Aegon's a fake. Aegon's not even the real deal. He just hopes it is against hope because of Rhaegar.
Yeah, I love that because it's a combination of like all of the lies that you said, but also the lie that he can redeem himself in terms of Rhaegar's legacy. And that he can
Yes.
serve, like, that he is doing this out of love for Rhaegar, as opposed to, I mean, you're doing it for yourself, sir.
And of course, it's interesting because Arya's having her own version of that lying arc that Sansa kind of had with Sandor in Clash of Kings, right? Sansa learned to lie because Sandor was like, hey, they're all liars here, better than you, and if you don't fucking pick up your pace, I can't save you from getting yourself killed, girlfriend. That's basically a clash of kings, right? And yeah. Arya's now here, and she's being told that if you want to live here, you need to start lying for your life, sister, and doing it in a way that they can't tell.
Yeah, or, like, it's either that, or you have to lie so hard to yourself, or you have to fucking believe it, right? Like, either you lie and keep Arya, or you give up all of your truths.
Mm-hmm.
So weird. Arya discloses the secret of the prayer, right? That there are people that she wants to die, there are people that she hates, and he tells her that this is the wrong place for that attitude. The gift of choosing who dies is only for him of many faces, and they are but servants. Arya asks, okay, cool, so which god is he in this temple? And he's like, all of them. She doesn't know his name, nor the waif, who reminds her of Weasel somehow. And Arya and the waif live below the temple with three acolytes, two serving men, and Uma, the cook, whom Arya cannot understand. No one else has shared their name. Ah. And Arya is not given the black and white uniform. She's given rough spun, undyed woolen clothing and cloth slippers. Oh, it's like a hotel.
Level one mage.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, cool. And she says that what she wears is servant's garb, and it makes me think of some of these other orders, right, where they ask you to sort of give up yourself and parts of your name, such as the maesters, in order to better serve.
Yeah, I love that. Especially, it makes me think in Fire and Blood, and I guess probably in the World of Ice and Fire for some of them, if it was released at this time or this information was available. But, you know, you have some of these Targaryens that end up going to the Citadel, like Vagon or Maester Aemon here, and them giving up their name, their niceties, etc., to do so and to kind of earn this respect and earn this position.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Aemon, see, he's also got time on his side. After a while, everyone who really knew was dead, you know?
So only the kindly man speaks the common tongue, and every day Arya tells him when he asks, who are you? No one. But inside, she knows she's been many people and has held many faces. But in her heart, she's Arya of Winterfell, and she remembers her family, though that's not the answer he's looking for. Arya can't speak to any of the others at the temple, but she listens to them and she tries to learn the words that they speak. The youngest blind acolyte would often walk the temple in charge of the candles in his slippers, using the scent to guide him and the warm air of the candles. Arya decides she'll try this method out herself and starts to learn some of those skills, which is interesting. Again, all this stuff is going to be really useful in the Long Night. I'm like, you girlfriend are getting a training course in how to live during the zombie attack on Winterfell, so I'm so excited for you. And then I never noticed the youngest acolyte being blind, and now I'm like, oh, is he passing the next part of his training, background foreshadowing for what she's about to do? Because of course to her, she's like, he's just a blind kid. But Arya, you're about to be that blind kid in just a couple chapters.
Yeah, watch out, Arya. No, you're right. I didn't notice that one till this reread either. And I do think it is part of the training. And I honestly, rereading Arya's chapters, I can really understand why this needs to be part of the training, because we've seen her really rely on sight a lot because of Sirio's lessons of, like, learn to really look. But she hasn't learned to really see yet, right? Or, like, sense. And it really makes me think of, you know, when they're like, yeah, he's lighting the candles because he can feel the warm air around them. Maester Aemon, and him being like, yo, that's not the real Lightbringer. If it was, I would have felt it. Literally, I would have literally felt the fire from it.
Oh, yeah, good call.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. Holy shit. Yeah.
I guess it's this book, maybe, or like just right before. So,
yeah.
Sam's chapter is Sam intersecting with Arya. It's fun times.
Seeing what's not there, yeah.
Yeah. Every dawn, they prayed, but Arya doesn't know the words. Well, Arya, have I got a pledge for you? So she prays her own prayer. Respect for authority. The worshippers come daily to the house of black and white, mostly alone, to pray at the pool, weep. A few would drink and go to sleep, but most would not. The temple is never full. Sometimes worshippers ask for a priest, and the kindly man or waif would take them to the sanctum, but not often. 30 total gods line the walls. The weeping woman, who's preferred by older women, Lyanna the Knight, which men prefer. Interesting. Oh, it's kind of like a little nod, right? Lannister-y, but not the Hooded Wayfarer.
That's the sheep herder from last episode, by the way. Not the sheep herder from last episode that I said, by the way. Sorry, I was wrong. I forgot the Hooded Wayfarer exists. I don't know why I didn't remember him.
Honestly, I didn't even catch it, so whatever. You got Bakalan, the Pale Child, whom soldiers prefer, and if I believe this is a reference to one of George's other stories, and the Moonpale Maiden, reference to one of perhaps our stories, we'll get there in a second, and the Merlin King, which is a sailor's favorite, and the Stranger. The Stranger was there too, though not well loved.
I love that the Stranger is there, even though he doesn't fit in, because the Stranger's fucking everywhere, and every culture is like, yeah, best not disrespect him. You know, may as well just throw him in there, just in case. Just in case.
Yeah.
I respect it. The Stranger's the same in every language, and I think that's beautiful. Also, I have to say about the prayers, it's so funny. The Arya's like, she doesn't know their words, so she does her own prayer. And I'm like, don't worry, they probably change the words every 10 years to fuck with you, like Catholicism.
Yeah. You know? It was messed up. I was like, I know the words. So, and then I went back and I'm like, damn, now everyone can tell I don't usually come here to Catholic Mass unless my family makes me, because they changed the words.
Fucked up, dude. Like, I know the sentiment. Like, do my years of catechism mean nothing now? Thanks.
Also, here are my opinions. This is not regarding the Nicene, oh, they switched the creeds, but like, so here are my thoughts. It used to be, before communion, Lord, I'm not worthy to receive you, but only say the words, and my soul shall be healed. And then they they switch it to, like, what is it now? Lord, I'm not worthy that you should enter under my roof, but only say the word, and it's not the same, and I liked it better before, because there were double entendres, and it had more poetry to it.
Yeah. I think that's my bigger problem, is the new ones suck. The old ones were really good. Like, they had it right. Why did they change it?
It had, like, a really great, I think,
panache.
Layers to it. Whereas this one is, like, really literal in, like, a not cool way.
Yeah. Because, like, religion's supposed to be fucking weird. Like, that's what's so cool about it. You're like, holy God, I am your creature. Absorb me into your fucking flesh. Like, that's something, like, Catholicism can be really metal when you think about it. Like, they really went and fucked it. They dropped their they fumbled that bag. Like, Catholicism, it's over for you. I will never, never.
This was like Benedict, right? I think Benedict was like, I don't know, they have to remember me for something. I should do something. A non-zero amount of things as Pope. And, like, he decided that was going to be the thing he did. No, I'm being, I'm like, he was just like, this is going to be the thing I do. A nominal change.
Worst that makes CEO it worse. Ever.
Yeah, for real. That's it. So thank you everyone for coming here and listening to Chloe and my thoughts on Catholicism and the words.
Recovering Catholic.
The lyrics. Speaking of gods, right? Wasn't Moonpale Maiden one of your monikers somewhere else once? We're gonna dig into Chloe's lore now. We've already dug into my lore.
Yeah, you Bravos. Now it's time for Chloe, equally as important as those two things, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, way back when, I ran a cute little Facebook page with some buddies called The Page of Many Faces. We were very obsessed with this part of Bravos. Like, we loved it. So that's why I'm so mad at myself for forgetting the Hooded fucking Wayfarer. Because I'm like, I should remember it because our friend Dan went by the Hooded Wayfarer. But yes, mine was Moonpale Maiden. I chose Moonpale Maiden. A good friend of ours, Elena, was Lion of Night. So lots
Shelley
of...
again?
Yeah. Shelley was the Weeping Woman.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Very fun. It was a fun time. We made some really silly book lover memes. It was in my D&D hate era, which I've ascended from, and it's like, still hate them, but understand how they got there, and like, some of my friends don't understand the story either, and they pretend they do, so it's okay.
Damn. Okay. Do you want me to leave that in there?
No, I think you should leave it, okay. So everyone can wonder which friends they are.
Fascinating.
I mean, if that describes you, if the shoe fits.
Chloe's in her chaos era.
I'm out of my hate D&D era. I'm in my projecting on everyone else era.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that page. That's so crazy. That's so funny. You used to post a lot. I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
This is like Facebook era, too. Anyways.
Yeah, it's still there. I mean, you guys can all go look at it in your free time if you feel like, and stalk it. It's got silly memes. It's got bad memes. It's got good memes. It's got it all. You know, it was an, it was also, but no, you're right. It was a Facebook era. Like this was like 2014 through 2016, like at its peak, probably. Mm-hmm. Like that was the era. That was the time with Game of Thrones when people cared.
Yeah.
And no one talks about it anymore. So.
I mean, we don't. We're Bucks. We're a Buck podcast.
Chaos era.
So they talk about the many-faced god, you know, and like there's this thing that they say, like, he has many faces and many ears to hear, and like how it doesn't matter where you say your prayer of death because he's gonna hear it because he's got many ears to hear. And it makes me think of the language that's used to describe fairies, and I mean even Bloodraven, right? Like when it comes to Master of Whispers and how people fear being observed. So I just thought that was kind of fun.
Ooh, yeah, I love that. I feel that there's a lot of Varys in these chapters, even though he's not here, you know?
Yeah, actually. I mean, like, that's the thing. That's why I was like, oh, I don't think, and I know other people thought of it and have said it before, but I'm like, wow, there really is a lot of merit to her being a Mistress of Whispers.
Yeah, I see it completely now.
She would have loved Taen of the Tower.
Oh, no, absolutely. Arya really would. Yeah, absolutely. She would love to go learn everything from her or, like, from Missaria.
Yeah, I mean, she just, like, I guess those weren't gardened yet as characters, but, like, the way that she feels about Nymeria, I feel like she could have been like, yo, what a cool historical figure.
Mm-hmm. Bacalan is from George's Seven Times Never Kill Man, by the way. Yeah, and it's basically telepathic creatures who live in a consciousness and they influence dreams through domes instead of trees. So if that sounds familiar.
Interesting. Maybe we should put that one on the list of ones to read next, because we are still doing. I was having a really good time doing some of those George short stories.
Yeah, we're actually talking about releasing one for you guys, for the public, in a handful of weeks, so, or maybe next week. So keep an eye out for that.
We don't know how time works, yeah.
Arya is allowed to wander amongst the vaults and storerooms of the temple as long as she stayed within and didn't go to the lowest level, the sanctum. She finds a room that's filled with weapons and armor and another with clothing. Interesting. Arya had imagined treasure chambers originally with golden plates, silver coins, and precious gems. It kind of is a treasure chamber in a way. She doesn't know that yet. This is the costume department, I believe, or part of it. Once the kindly man catches her prying in the vaults and she's like, oh, I'm lost. And he's like, you lie. And he sighs and he kicks her out of there. She tends to work in the kitchens with Umma, and sometimes she gets her hand smacked for getting in the way by Umma. But otherwise, no one hits her, which is kind of nice and very sad for her to say that. Like, oh, it's kind of a nice place to work compared to my previous places of employment in the last 2 years from 9 to 11 years old. She even starts to learn cooking skill, which is really important. She learns tons about the fish and the shellfish of the waters here.
These are important. I don't know. I kind of giggle when I think of stop being the first bravosi word that she learned, because I think it's more funny that George didn't bother to come up with a word for it, right? Because as he said, he's not very good with languages, so he just never made that word. Actually, yeah, he also doesn't give us, for example, the words for any of these animals, which we're going to find out that Arya does know the words for these later on. Clams and cockles, mussels and muskfish, frogs and turtles, mud crabs and leopard crabs, climber crabs, red eels, black eels, lamprey, oysters, all with spices or garlic, sometimes even saffron, are like what Umma is cooking. And yeah, George was like, fuck it, it's too many animals. I'm not going to make up words for all of those. And being in the kitchens, though, really makes her think of Hot Pie. She's like, ah, Hot Pie would have loved it here. He probably would have, definitely.
Isn't it so sad that she spent, like, the last however many books being like, fuck you, Hot Pie, and then now she's like, I really miss that guy.
Yeah,
like,
well,
poor Arya.
Yeah. You don't know what you got until they're gone. That's actually literally how she feels about her siblings. Damn.
Yeah, that's how she feels about Sansa. She's like, fuck Sansa, and she's like, I miss that bitch.
Yeah, we don't know how that feels.
I don't understand, so. Like my favorite time of day, Arya's favorite time of day is supper. She asks the kindly man why people at the temple are so peaceful, unlike all of those that she knows back home in Westeros who are afraid of death. And he says, well, death isn't the worst thing there is, and it's kind of a gift to end want and pain, to be able to stop that suffering. He tells her about a dark angel that's sent by the many-faced god to lead people to the Nightlands. Arya pretends to smell candles, and she tells him what she smells, and, you know, but what she's supposed to say is nothing, so she's like, oh, nothing, even though we know what it smells like. We've already heard from Arya 1, it's snow and pine needles and hot stew. That sounds good.
Yeah, drugs as candles. Each person getting, like, that dark angel or something that walks beside them makes me think of every single person being born with their deaths in the His Dark Materials series, and we learn more about that in the Amber Spyglass. So that just kind of made me smile. I don't think they're related at all. But also, Arya thinks of, I don't know, are you sure people want to die? Because I think about that pimply squire I killed, and he definitely did not seem like he wanted to. And all the people that she saw screaming and not wanting death. And I think that comes back to that idea that we've been talking about of choice, right? When you choose to give yourself up versus not, right? There's definitely a difference between seeing death as a way out also, or versus wanting to keep on living and someone taking that from you. Or even like having something to die for, which is again, kind of speaks to that idea of sacrifice versus self-sacrifice, as Ned did, right? When he died for one great big lie for his daughters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also have to say, but men's lives have meaning, not their deaths, Eliana.
Okay, but we flip-flop on this every five POVs or so. We're like, but do they have meaning? Maybe, but oh no, they don't have, but maybe.
Look, we barely have five POVs left, so like this is it. I don't think we can flip-flop again, can we?
I mean,
we probably could.
We also got hot D, so and unleash the D. There's a lot of things that could happen. We could even get wins during sorry, I should just, if I don't talk about it, will like that manifest, and I'm gonna start coming up with some like magical thinking rituals now.
We do not want the wins a winner. We do not want the wins a winner. It is not going to happen for us.
I'm about to come up looking with some under new my superstitions, chair. Yeah, to make it come out.
Wear your clothes inside out and T-Wow comes out tomorrow.
Throw some ice cubes in the toilet. Spin around three T-Wow times.
T-Wow out tomorrow. So the kindly man calls Arya by her full name, making it clear she could leave the temple anytime, but she isn't going to be welcomed back if she does so. She says she wants to stay, and he reminds her all men must work Valar Dohaeris and be obedient.
That's some Girl Scouts shit for sure.
Yeah, and like just that like light little slip of like in there, like, oh yes, we're so happy and control.
Respect for authority.
Jesus. Arya has other tasks at the temple. She has to sweep the floors, sort the clothing, count coins. She helps the kindly man find the dead in alcoves, which they're pretty easy to find, because they arrive, they pray, they drink the water, and then they sleep, quote-unquote.
Mm. Yeah, and then we have the kindly man being like, the gift of the many-faced god takes myriad forms, but here it is always gentle.
There's a lot of dimension in here. Your voice is very creepy. You're such a fucking creep.
I've been leaning into the creepy ones. I don't know if you remember what I did for the tickler, but I don't know. I feel like what's kindly and gentle, like too gentle, you know?
Yeah. I haven't found my voice for him yet. I'm still working on it.
Like, I'm trying to channel, like, how they're like, yeah, Roose Bolton spoke in a whisper.
Yeah, I figured it was kind of Roose Bolton-y for you. Yeah, nice. Yeah. I like.
Thanks.
There's a lot of dimension here. There's Arya kind of starting to see the difference between murder and mercy in her POVs, and that's being outlined here, right? Like, Arya sees killing as vengeance or justice. Mm. When she murders someone, it's because they deserve to die for the crimes that they did.
Yes.
Right? To her or to others around her. Wow.
That kid.
The kindly man is trying to teach her, that's not what we do, quote unquote. Mm. We don't kill in anger. Our killing is a kindness that comes before the anger, or when it's all a person has left, is what he's saying. But I'm also cognizant that, like, the kindly man is selling her this vision of peaceful euthanasia. What we do is peaceful euthanasia. We're helping, but also we're watching them sneak their employed assassins back in down to the sanctum and change their faces. And, like, the fact that there's this lower level, the sanctum, that Arya can't go to and she's not allowed to see, and these people that show up on and off and she doesn't know why, but they're always, like, coming in, speaking to the priest, going downstairs, and the creepiness that we'll come to here of Pork in a moment. Like, there's an uglier underwing of this business, the underbelly of the business that she doesn't know about. Like, freedom of choice, liberation. That's not enough to power this society. If freedom of choice and liberation were so freedom of choice and liberation, why is Arya here doing the bureaucratic side of things? And why is there a part of the business she doesn't know? Which, spoiler alert, it's where they murder people to stay afloat in the business and they make money off of it. Like,
hey, you don't know that those people who go down there didn't have organ donor checked on their driver's license and the organ is their face.
Listen, Oregon tax policy. get it? Instead of Aragorn's tax policy.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Oregon, the state.
Oregon Trail.
I was like, what am I missing here? And yeah, no, I really like what you're calling out of, like, it is, I mean, they're hiding it because it is an ugly business and they want you to be in too deep before you get to know the secrets. Like,
yeah, like a cult.
And, but I also really love the way you've put mercy and justice against one another here again and how it manifests in Arya's storyline. And I mean, it is a little hypocritical, right? They're all like, yes, peaceful euthanasia, but like, let's be real. They're going to kill if they have to kill. Like, people are always saying, is Jaqen H'ghar a rogue? A, he is a rogue in terms of class in Dungeons & Dragons, the other D&D. But is he, has he gone a rogue from the tenets of the House of Black and White? But it very much seems like he's probably there on a mission for them of some sort. And that might mean, yeah, sure, let's kill all these people just to get there, or even like killing people in order to indoctrinate Arya into being like, yeah, killing's normal and fine, right?
Well, and killing is like part of cult initiation, right?
Sometimes.
If you murder someone, it gives you blackmail.
Oh my
god. So then you're stuck doing and leveraging for them, and you're stuck in a cycle for them.
Like Sansa and the Hairnet and Littlefinger.
Yes, exactly. Like Sansa and the Hairnet and Littlefinger.
Well. Anyway, so yeah, the kindly man would pray after finding a body, and Arya would fetch the serving men to take the body to the vaults. The acolytes there strip and wash the bodies and take the valuables and clothes for sorting. In a temple, the dead are taken to the lower sanctum, and she begins to suspect the meat that she's eating is human flesh, but the kindly man claims that it's pork. I think this one probably is. They have enough, but like, let's say, Arya, one of your siblings is not eating pork. Let's just, one of your siblings, definitely not. You can share stories later. Her bed is made. Have you ever tried this dish? Her
delicacy,
bed,
delicacy. Yeah,
is made of stone, but is also stuffed with rags instead of straw. And she keeps her treasures in her room from the Titan's daughter, as well as Needle.
She practices swordplay or needlework when she can in the shadow by a blue candle. But one night, the waif sees her. The waif doesn't say anything, but obviously she narcs on Arya because the next day, the kindly man is like, you need to throw all this shit out. And he's like, you're a servant and you are playing at being a servant, but you are still a lord's daughter in your heart.
Yeah, so it's a less brutal version of it, but it makes me think of the Unsullied, right? When they're like, here's a dog that you will love and cherish, and it is yours to keep alive. And then they're like, you have to kill it. And in the way that they're making whoever joins the House of Black and White give up all of these personal belongings in order to join, it's very much this idea of like erasing the self. And again, speaks to that indoctrination that's going on here. And it does make sense, though, for I think what they are doing as part of their process and making them all into one order, as opposed to what we see when it comes to like the Night's Watch, the King's Guard, and the Maesters, right? Like, for example, with the Night's Watch, it's really clear from the get-go, from the prologue, that you can see the difference between the new members of the Night's Watch and the old ones by how worn the clothing is, but also in terms of the quality, right? Like, you can tell easily who comes to the Night's Watch as a high-born person versus a low-born person by their garments. They don't give them new fucking cloaks or anything. You go there with the black clothing that you have, or maybe someone will give you, or you'll dye your stuff later on, right? As opposed to here where they're like, no, we're all the same. We're all no one. And in the Kingsguard, everyone knows, like, you keep your name. And by being part of the Kingsguard, you're bringing honor to that house. And the Maesters, they very much retain, even though they say that they give up part of their name, they definitely retain a sense of self, which is explored in A Dance with Dragons.
Yeah, I like what you've called out here, especially with Jamie too being before this, right? In that conversation with Loras Tyrell and Jamie.
Yeah.
It seems George really wanted to bring more of that Maester and, you know, some of these orders, whether they're more militant or more academic, depending on the order, he wanted to bring a lot of that in with Old Town being the front of the book, right?
Yeah.
I think that there's definitely there's something interesting about him putting all these orders in this book and having Aerys Okhart and his Kingsguard vows and Jaime and his vows and Aemon and Old Town with Sam and Sirella and everybody, and then here now with the Faceless Men. I see what he's doing. I see the blueprint here.
Yeah, and that is interesting because that prologue does have that convergence of the Maesters and the Faceless Man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the kindly man tells her that if she can't give up her mind, body, and soul to him of many faces, she must leave. And worse, this is something that you cannot buy with gold. You have to buy it with you. You have to pay the tuition by giving all of yourself. And we have this line here from Arya. I have a hole where my heart should be, she thought, and nowhere else to go. I'm strong as you. I'm hard.
I love this. I love her saying, like, to him, like, no, I'm hard, I'm strong. But inside she's like, I'm not strong. I'm fucking dying. Yeah. I have nothing else. Nowhere else will take me. Like, this is all I have. I've come this far. I mean, oh my God, she just came all the way over here. She made it all the way over here. She kind of does feel that she has to do it. And we talked about this in Arya 12 in A Storm of Swords, but more cat parallels in the language here, right? Cat 7 in A Clash of Kings. There's an empty place within me where my heart once was. I have a hole where my heart should be, she thought. Of course, then Arya 12, A Storm of Swords. She could feel the hole inside her every morning when she woke. It wasn't hunger, though sometimes there was that too. It was a hollow place, an emptiness where her heart had been, where her brothers had lived and her parents. Her head hurt too. And then there's that later line in that same chapter. The hole will never feel any better, she told herself when she went to sleep. It is just emptiness.
Yeah. Interesting. All of those together with something clicked for me when you just said, like, the way that Arya is describing this, it sounds like she's dying on the inside, right? And that's kind of what's going on in this chapter of, like, I guess the kindly man is trying to say in some ways that we are the same as those people who are out there asking for the gift of mercy. But they've just gone through the process of killing their selves, obliterating the self, to be servants of him of the many faced god. And he says that that death is not the worst thing that can happen. And as we see, right, like, her mother is one of those people who is in that between of death and life. Essentially, he's saying you have to kill yourself. You have to kill Arya Stark in order to be here, and it is still a death, but the body's still there, which is the same as with Catelyn and the other zombies. Oh, broken.
Well, and it comes back to, like you said, broken man. It comes back to what you were saying about, like, dying and having a reason to die versus living and men's lives having meaning and not their deaths, etc. Like, in a way, you know, it really encompasses, like, how you live, who you love. That's the important part of life, not how you kill yourself and become this soulless shell.
Yeah. Like, those were deaths, like, the people who are here in this temple. Like, they're deaths of people who are losing that sense of desire, right? Versus Arya's here because she has something that she wants. And they're trying to be like, you can't fucking want that if you're going to be here. And very much that Robert Frost poem of, what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. Oh, she's a very fiery little girl, despite being born of ice. Anyway.
We love fiery little girls on this podcast, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true.
A good fiery ruler or leader or follower. The kindly man offers to find Arya another place, in service of a merchant's household, or with the courtesans, or maybe marriage and children, or Westeros. They could take her to Gold Town, Duskendale, King's Landing, or even opposite, to Tyrosh, or on Luco Prestane's Ladybright ship.
Whomst? Name-dropping people I don't know? God.
He's a minor character. Maybe you just don't get it. I'm just kidding.
Clearly don't.
We should check on our friend Micah. I think I was channeling him for a second there.
So I think it's interesting that all of these placements that the kindly man offers, they just, like, do not suit Arya in the least. Like, these are none of these things that are appealing to her, right? Like, he doesn't offer her, like, oh, you like doing shit with your sword? Why don't you become a Bravo, right? Why don't you learn fucking swordplay? Even though that is an option here in this town, and by town I mean city, he doesn't offer to, you know, send her to a kitchen and be like, oh, it seems like you've been having a good time with Umma. Like, why don't you go work in a kitchen? Maybe that goes under serving in a lord's household. I don't know. Or he isn't like, oh, you can become a scholar. I mean, this is a city. There's a lot of things that she could fucking become, all right? He doesn't offer to help her become a sailor, even though we know that's something that she was enjoying, being on the ship. It's kind of, like, manipulative, because the only options that he offers her are, like, very gendered and also to an extent of a sexual nature. He's like, oh, do you want to be a courtesan? And people will praise your beauty. When we know Arya's never cared about her looks really in that way, other than like at the beginning of the story when people told her it was important. Like, do you want to your body to be used for breeding or to sate men's lust? Like, these are the two options that he really fleshed out for her. And these are also the exact reasons that she was struggling to be Lady Arya of House Stark, because she didn't want to live by those gender roles. I'm like, damn, you could have offered her anything that like actually mattered. So it seems really weird.
Right, like King's Landing was a lie, but now Braavos is another lie, right? This is a place that's supposed to be freer than King's Landing in these cultural and societal values. And yeah, what you've picked up on here is great, because it's like he's saying, this is your only option to be free. He's leveraging the other box that you can get put in if you're a female, right? If you are a woman in Westeros, he's leveraging that, like, guess this is all you could be if you weren't here, and coercing her into realizing, this is the only place for you. You can only be with us if you want to truly be free. And it is exploitative, right? Like, considering he's about to tell the story of the Valyrians and the enslaving of the Faceless Man, like, is this actually freedom? Giving your body for the Faceless Men, working for the Faceless Men, giving them your heart, your soul, your priceless memories. Like, is that actually freedom? Are you really free? What are you free of?
Yeah. No, for real, because you're not free to, like, live your life there. And that's cool if this is the path you've chosen. And I guess he is trying to make that clear, right? He's like, I mean, if you don't want to be here, you can go. But at the same time, he's like, this is your, I don't know. It's weird. It's this weird tension. Because he's right. You really don't have to go to this school.
Yeah.
But they do really want her. They see a lot of promise and potential in Arya Stark. No, I think they do.
They do. The kindly man tells Arya God might have brought her there to be his instrument, but the kindly man sees her as a child. A girl child, at that, worse. Women can bring life into this world, but we, the faceless men, bring the gift of death, and no one can do both. So she would need to give up all of her body. All of it. Even that part of it. But Arya's not scared of these words.
That's really weird. What do you mean no one can do both? I thought that was the fucking point. We are no one. Anyways.
I mean, Lyanna Stark did it.
Yeah, that's true.
She brought life and death into the world at the same time.
Well, yeah, and only death can pay for life. There's a lot going on here.
Sacrifice, bitch.
Yeah, that's like going on that I think we are supposed to question that, and there's like a lot of tension, but also like, can't believe that the kindly man is sexist, but...
I can. Most men are. I'm sexist too, though, so.
Oh my god.
Against men.
I'm just like, why do we even need that in the House of Black and White? But I think, like, thematically, so I think it's doing a lot of things now that we've, like, talked it through, and is supposed to be responding to other things that are happening in the story, like, right, like how we say, oh, Lyanna Stark, well, maybe we don't say it, but I'm realizing as I read through, like, Lyanna was wrong that love cannot change a man's nature. The story puts things out there, and then it argues, is this right, is this wrong? Anyways, obviously women can fucking kill too. It also speaks to some of these Freudian ideas that I feel that George is playing with, whether he knows it or not, in regards to the nature of the uncanny, that which is familiar and unfamiliar, and how it manifests in Arya's storyline and in archetypes about the mother, right? we see it with Lady Stoneheart and Catelyn, how the mother, as an archetype in Freud and Jung, it can be nurturing but also smothering. And this idea of the womb and tomb as one, right? The earth itself being an embodiment of that, as the womb from which we all come, but also the tomb to which we all return. So anyway, I think it's also like really interesting that we get this weird shit as well of like, women can't bring life and kill and take it out at the same time, when this is the same book that the sand snakes are introduced in.
Yeah, it's like a huge overture of the entire book, so much so that, you know, there's the Cushing Library that has some of the drafts of all of the different Aeswaf books, and there's the prologue that's been discovered that George almost wrote the prologue in A Feast for Crows from Rosie's POV. Oh. And the bits that were available was that Rosie originally was a girl who wanted to be a maester. And George was so really influenced by that. And this is more meta speculation, but obviously he didn't go with that because Rosie's, you know, still there at the inn. But he added Sorella into the story, right? To give us that POV at the Citadel, which I think is really interesting in kind of a meta progressive way.
That is really interesting because then you see like the role that Rosie gets relegated to. But also, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's probably better that the prologue character was unlikable, aka Pate, yeah. Because then he gets to die in
the Valcel.
It makes sense too with like how we weave things in with the Faceless Men plot. So
mm-hmm.
because I would prefer that over Rosie. I don't know, Rosie.
Oh yeah, no,
cool.
I don't want this POV, but I'm more interested in the Citadel and the idea of, and look at Brienne, right, who is acting as basically a Kingsguard throughout this book, the truest knight in Westeros, right? Look at Jaime and Brienne against one another in this book. Not like that, you perverts.
But it can be like that.
It can be like that. Do whatever you want. Look at them however you please. But yeah, I just think there's a lot going on of the idea of like the order of the world or any order in the world and the systemic version of it that says women can do this, men can do this, and how they actually take that and they continue that idea systemically throughout the world.
Well, because it is throughout the world, right? Like, there's no way we know for a fact, even if it's not said, Rosie cannot have been and is not the first nor the last person who's assigned female at birth who wants to be a maester, right? Like,
yeah.
Especially in that city, you see all those people who live there. A bunch of them are probably like, wow, it'd be really cool to go join the Citadel. Right? Like, there's
why
a lot
wouldn't
of studios.
You want higher education if it was available to you and it was right there?
Yeah, there's a lot of studious people out there who think it would be really fun. Or, like, you have Miri Mazdor, right, who learned some of those things from Armin. Or, and seems very capable, as capable as any of the maesters. You have, like you said, Brienne. Like, Brienne and Arya are not the first. And the Sand Snakes prove that, are not the first people who have wanted to be fighters, but couldn't because of their body parts.
I mean, we wouldn't have historical people that also have already done it, like Jonquil, the Scarlet Shadow Jonquil, and, you know, Visenya was a warrior. I mean, she was one of the best of her time. She was fast, she was quick, she was sharp, she was strong. And there's something in that of, like, these people had some accommodations for themselves to help them be better knights, but so do people like Arthur Dayne, who carry the Sword of the Morning, Dawn.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's an accommodation to be able to do your job better, so...
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's... Now that I think about it, like, it's pointed that we have characters like Gendry and Hot Pie in Arya's story, right? Because Gendry is... for the most part, a pretty, like, emotionally intelligent boy. And...
Yeah.
And...
the Gale of the story.
He's a soft boy in many ways, and I like that about him. And, unlike his dad, Hot Pie, the things that he wants for his life are things that are, to an extent, coded as feminine, right? He's like, I want to go bake and do cute things, so... He doesn't say he wants to do cute things, but...
Yeah, it can be both, though.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, there are people who are, like, male and who also buck, to an extent, gender expectations within this story.
Mm-hmm. We have a passage from the book that I felt was important. We've got a couple passages left. Buckle up.
You should stay, and the many-faced god will take your ears, your nose, your tongue. He will take your sad gray eyes that have seen so much. He will take your hands, your feet, your arms and legs, your private parts. He will take your hopes and dreams, your loves and hates. Those who enter his service must give up all that makes them who they are. Can you do that? He cupped her chin and gazed deep into her eyes, so deep it made her shiver. No, I do not think you can.
Arya knocked his hand away. I could if I wanted to.
So says Arya of House Stark, eater of grave worms.
I can give up anything I want.
He gestured at her treasures. Then start with these.
But I won't do that.
Eater of grave worms, damn, calling her out. That's her defining characteristic.
Eater of grave worms. After supper, Arya can't sleep, so in the black of night, she dons her Westerosi clothing and buckles her sword belt on. This is no place for Arya of Winterfell, but she has no pack. They killed her pack. In the night, she moves through the fog and stops at the water's edge with her silver fork and tosses it first. Next comes her floppy hat, no, her gloves, her pouch of coins, her boots, her dagger, her sword belt, then her tunic, all of it. And she stands pale, goose-fleshed, and shivering at the water.
Yeah, so I like this idea that she starts with tossing the silver fork. Makes me think of, you know, like people, the saying, being born with a silver spoon in your mouth. She's getting rid of that. And also, I'm like, dang, she really learned fucking nothing, right? She just threw away the money into the river. Like, I don't think she had to do that. That could have been donated.
Could have just left it on the ground, you know what I mean? My God.
She's like, money? Throw it away.
All right.
You ready?
I'm ready for the BAFTA, you know? In her hand, needles seemed to whisper to her. Stick them with the pointy end, it said, and don't tell Sansa. Mickon's mark was on the blade. It's just a sword. If she needed a sword, there were 100 under the temple. Needle was too small to be a proper sword. It was hardly more than a toy. She'd been a stupid little girl when John had it made for her. It's just a sword, she said, aloud this time, but it wasn't. Needle was Rob, and Bran, and Rickon, her mother and her father, even Sansa. Needle was Winterfell's gray walls and the laughter of its people. Needle was the summer snows, old Nan's stories, the heart tree with its red leaves and scary face, the warm, earthy smell of the glass gardens, the sound of the north wind rattling the shutters of her room. Needle was Jon Snow's smile. He used to mess my hair and called me little sister, she remembered, and suddenly there were tears in her eyes.
Tears in our eyes.
Yeah, I'm okay. I got stoned before this, to be fair, but...
No, we don't do drugs. No one does drugs. 420, yeah, do not blaze it.
That is a very sad passage. I'm sad. We're sad. There's something in there, too, that I love when she even says, Needle was too small to be a proper sword. It's hardly more than a toy. She'd been a stupid little girl when John had it made for her, like saying she's grown out of it. It's time to throw it away. And all these fancies and the ideas I had of, like, having Needle. Mm. Nope. Arya thinks the old gods wanted her to have this sword, right? That the many-faced god can have everything else, but not Needle. She runs naked up the steps and she finds a shoddy step that she can hide Needle beneath, shoving stone over it, and then she counts the steps back to the temple, memorizing them so she'll know where she hid it, promising to come back someday. And these memories are worth more than an iron coin or blood or gold. You can't buy these memories of love, of care, of nurturing, unconditional love, right? Of home. Yeah. You can't buy those memories with those things, maybe with blood, but... Arya will never be able to give these feelings up. How could you? I couldn't give these up.
Yeah. As you said, unconditional love. And she had that. And still does in different ways. Her parents are dead. But Warren was right. Needle is so important to Arya's story. And, like, it means so much that she got Needle back. And I can't believe two chapters later she has to fucking get rid of it. But you know, needle here actually is a sewing needle, right? It has the threads, it holds the threads that tie her to her family. And also needle as her, as Arya Stark, neither a sword nor a dagger, as you called out, too small to be a sword. You know, it's a sword that has no category and therefore doesn't quite fit into this or the other. It's its own secret third thing. but it's its own thing, right? Just like Arya doesn't fit within the bounds of everything. Neither does Needle. Needle's a weapon symbolizing protection. You know, it's the protection that home and family gives her for her sense of self, but also something that I think she kind of hoped she could have used to protect her family. She's like, I'm gonna go in. We're gonna save my mom. And I'm like, you could not do that. And she leaves it hidden there, right? Like, it's hope at the bottom of Pandora's box, locked in there. And interestingly, hidden behind a stone. Lots of stones going on in the Stark storyline with Stoneheart, but also Elaine Stone. But you said something of, like, Needle being too small, almost a toy.
Like her.
Yeah, but, like, you were saying, like, she feels like she has to get rid of that child, perhaps. And I'm like, oh, this is her kill the boy and let the man be born moment. But that's not always right or the good thing to do, because look at how that fucking turned out for Jon.
Yeah, that's a bad, like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Yeah, you're in danger. Anyway, so, Needle. The next night, the kindly man sits with her and tells her that the faceless men are older than the Titan, that they were first rooted in Valyria among the slaves who worked in the mines of the 14 Flames, living mountains with veins of molten rock and hearts of fire, basically an oven that stank of brimstone. Can you imagine? Probably smelled like sulfuric eggs, like, all the time. Like,
just eggs all the time. You, like, my first job, I was a bus girl at an Italian restaurant, and I would come home stinking of chicken and olive oil every night, and, like, not in a good way. Like, it was, like, go take a fucking shower.
Yeah.
So I would. But I remember really tired nights, just exhausted-ass, like, parties that we had to serve for, and I just remember, like, getting home and being so exhausted and just laying on the bed and making my comforter probably smell disgusting. But it just sounds awful. Like, it's not, like, you come home from 12 hours toiling in that, 14 hours probably. I mean, they're slaves, so 80 hours?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know. Do they even get to go home? There is no home that they get to go back to. They're just there until they collapse, it sounds like.
Yeah. It kind of sounds, like, interesting, because I'm like, they decided the home for them. The Valyrians decided where they live, how they work, what they do. And now the faceless men decide where people live.
Yeah.
How they live, how they work. Huh.
Though in theory, I guess she doesn't have to go to this school. But,
Yeah. No, that's very true.
But yeah. Yeah, so he tells her, like, this is our founding story, our university founding story. it was awful to breathe. The feet of the slaves were burnt constantly. And also there were fireworms in the passages. Go eat one of those, Arya. Some say they breathed fire and maybe even came before the dragons. And the Valyrians would take slaves by the thousands during war and breed them in times of peace. And there were revolts that were common, but few accomplished much, as the dragon lords were strong in sorcery.
The first faceless man had risen up against his oppressors. Men of 100 different nations would labor in the mines, and each would pray to their own god in their own tongue, but all were praying for the same thing, which was release from their suffering. The faceless men realized, or the faceless man realized the gods were deaf, and this realization changed everyone's lives. And he almost, like, that spark of, you know, autonomy finally, like, what? He tells her the first man was God's instrument and freed the most wretched slave that night who prayed for release from his bondage. Arya drew back from him. He killed the slave? That did not sound right. He should have killed the masters.
He would bring the gift to them as well. But that is a tale for another day. One best shared with no one. He cocked his head. And who are you, child?
No one.
A lie.
I don't have anything, like, poetic or smart prepared to say here, and I don't think that I have anything to add of value besides there's something in this interesting about, like, what Arya doesn't yet realize about the Faceless Men as another system, and what she also didn't understand about the Faceless Man's gift when Jaqen was giving, you know, her his ear, that the original Faceless Man wasn't going to be able to topple the entire system of slavery at the Valyrian Freehold by killing one specific person. right? Mm-hmm. As Arya later is like, what if I had just killed Tywin? When he had his one wish, like she once had, he instead freed the other slave who was living in misery and killed them. Killing one of the masters would not have freed this man, right, who had suffered so horrendously. Another person would rise up in power to take that position and continue hurting the slave, and he kills the slave, and it becomes a tool, as you'll infer to, I think, for maybe freeing the rest of them in the end. So a sacrifice in order to keep it moving. And I think there's some stuff with A Dance with Dragons with Daenerys, right, that comes into this well. Like, yeah. She ends up in Meereen because she can't free Meereen in a day just by killing the masters, she learns. This is a society and a culture and a place that was so steeped in its history that all of its systems revolve around that history.
Yeah, I mean, systems change takes a long time, right? Like, and it takes mm-hmm. intentional work. And, you know, I that's one of the things that I thought Parks and Rec got really right. They're like, if you want to meld these, like, two towns together, this is, like, at least 10 years, at least. And I'm like, that's true. That is absolutely real. And yeah, I don't think I really have anything smart to say. I mean, like, we all know, like, this was a horrendous system that they had, and slavery is bad. And
yeah.
So I don't have much to elaborate on this. I have some thoughts on, like, lore of, like, you know, that first one, the first slave that the faceless man killed to take his face. And also, how did this man make magic?
Yeah, that's kind of what's implied, right? And then you have all of this mystical atmosphere of the fireworms and the Valyrians and the 14 flames. Like, something's going on here. Maybe some sort of magic or some other sort of smoke and mirrors, as we hear from Melisandre's, you know? Yes, smoke, exactly. But yeah, I think it's definitely inferred that that slave died, he took his face, and that then birthed what became the faceless men and the magic and being able to take other faces and used it as a tool to, you know, come back at the Valyrians.
Or, hold on, I'm just realizing now, another thing it could be interpreted as, the very first slave that he kills was that himself. In regards to the obliteration of self.
Yeah, there are like 8 Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes jokes I'm not making right now. I really need you to read that book.
Wow. Yeah. Anyway.
He tells her that he knows how to read faces. He says muscles tells everything, that eventually you'll see the signs on a person, like telling dusk from dawn. And he asks, you can tell dusk from dawn, right? It's pretty obvious. Well, there you go. That's what this becomes. And it kind of reminds me, and is especially like with Arya, there's a line in the Dune books from the Manual of Ma'adib by the Princess Irulan, where it says, what do you despise? By this you are truly known. And coming back to kind of what we said up top with Ned, right? His tells. Arya herself has her own tells.
Yeah, that's true. She definitely does. And it also makes me think
by the things she hates.
Yeah. Makes me think of those micro expressions that the whole show Lie to Me was built off of. I don't know if you ever watched
that. Yeah.
Also, I'm like, Arya is wondering, she's like, I don't actually know if I could tell dusk from dawn. And I'm like, I know she can't, because if she could, she would have been a better navigator in general. The sun rises and falls in similar spots every day.
I knew that you were going to shit on. I'm like, if there's one thing Eliana's going to do, it's she's going to get after Arya for her lack of navigational skills.
She's learning. But I'm just like saying, you know, there's two things. It's Arya's navigation and her love of worms. This is all you need to make an Arya Stark. Anyway. She wants to learn, and the kindly man says, all right, the wife's going to teach you. She'll teach Arya the Bravosi tongue daily, each from the other, and Arya becomes a novice of black and white. They give her a robe. It's buttery soft. It's kind of cool. It's, like, white on top, and then, like, the undergarments are black. Kind of fun. Very fashionable. Arya and the waif spend time together learning each other's languages. They start with simple words that George never made, but eventually move on to the harder words and sentences. And the waif is better at learning the common tongue than Arya is at learning Bravosi, and they start playing a lying game to practice the language. And as we were talking about at the start of this chapter, there's a lot that has to do with the ability to lie convincingly that I think has to do with the ability to believe whatever it is that they are saying, believe hardcore in that one big lie. And I think by erasing the sense of self, instilling the belief that someone actually is no one, it erases the anchor as a sense of truth, and it allows someone to lie convincingly because they can believe in any untruth. But also in cults, it's like you unlearn all these other truths, and then the cult becomes the sense of truth. But at least I think in the House of Black and White, that's part of what they're doing, but they're also making it so that you can easily believe any truth to tell it convincingly, or any lie, whatever.
Yeah, like a blank slate.
Yeah.
Arya eventually realizes the waif is actually not a tiny child. She was saying that the waif reminded her of Weasel, the little girl, and it turns out the waif is 36 years old. This woman is 36 years old.
I could and be the waif.
Yeah, you're almost there, yeah, you old Emrafer. Right? Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm going to like ride that as long as I can. The other day, my roommate was like, you're going to be 32 soon. And I'm like, without missing a beat and like reactively, I was just like, not if I can help it. And he was like, what?
Time to start.
Not if I can help it. Yeah, for real. So yeah, the waif is a grown woman who's given up her life to the many-faced god, and Arya wonders if she'll live to give up her life to become like the waif or not grow anymore. And the kindly man explains it's from the poisons, from the drugs, like you and I were talking about.
That's why you don't do
and
drugs.
And Arya, yeah, don't do drugs. Arya then understands, because the waif empties a stone flagon into the black pool every day after prayer. So interesting, even like her just being near it so much has some side effects. Also that the poison in there stunts growth. If you drink enough of it, it kills you. But if you drink a little bit of it or touch it, it might stunt your growth. And obviously people of smaller stature exist, but and it might not be related, but it makes me think of the ghost of Highheart a little bit and her gift of prescience and like of being able to see things and makes me wonder what else this water of life shit gives Dune.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. Like, I don't think that the waif has to drink as much of it to stay that size. I think that they were like, you know what would be really convenient? A child-sized faceless man.
Mm-hmm. That's you why know? They have Arya today.
Yeah, but actually, maybe, you know? Yeah. Like, they're like,
no one's going to think a kid's going to stab you.
Yeah, they're like, you know what's better for your personal career path, little girl who got sold here? If you just stayed this size. Anyway, it also makes me think of, like, something that they play with in the books of poison as a woman's weapon. The Tears of Lys, and also, I mean, There's this saying people have regarding, like, wanting vengeance, right? It's like drinking, or wanting revenge, it's like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. And so, that's it. That's the deepest thought I have on that. You can all string it together.
That was pretty interesting.
And how it goes with Arya's storyline from there.
I also think there's something in there, especially as we talk about, like, giving up your body to the faceless men. This is in its most extreme. Right? Makes me think a lot about, like, body ownership under capitalism, where your boss pays you and money is what makes it so that you can live or houses you, etc. So it kind of is that, like, line between private property and individual responsibility. Like, the line now blurs on who owns you, how you think, what you do. If you're having to give your life away for this job, like, congratulations, you're making however many figures, but you're giving your life away for this job.
Right.
And for this idea and your memories and your soul and everything, even to an unhealthy aspect here, like what the waif has done in not growing and staying childlike. Like, I don't know, interesting lines to be blurred about the body under whatever government we want to call this, slash also fiscal society.
Yeah. They took this girl's whole life from her, right? Like, what is the difference between a slave and her dad giving her away to here? And did they offer the waif the same choice as Arya? Like, you don't have to stay here. Like, it's what your dad did was super shitty, but you don't gotta stay here. Or did they do exactly as you said, you know? Like, which I think they did to some extent, of being like, it would be really cool if you stayed this size.
Yeah, there's also like a fetishization, right, of the idea of staying petite and childlike for a woman or someone that was...
Are we talking about the 10 and 11-year-olds buying retinol?
Well, no, I was talking more of, like, men preferring petite, childlike women and pedophilia in the way that our countries, the way our globe was set up on the idea of trafficking young children for their body, for, you know, your iPhones, or, like, for their body for, like, millionaires, whatever.
True.
But
yeah.
But yeah, I was thinking of that as fetishization of, like, the stature and petiteness.
especially the how the show played it off with them.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Too young thing. Or not too young, too old. There we go. That's what it was.
Yeah, too old.
Because too young would have been like what a pretty normal person would have done. Anyways, visitors often visit the House of Black and White, and Uma sends Arya to go pour for them. And the kindly man instructs her to be still and not listen. Arya hears a lot of conversation, but it's actually pretty easy to not listen, turns out, when you don't understand the language. So she does that. Arya is using her past skills from here of being Roose's cupbearer. And Arya asks the kindly man about Draken Hagar and how he changed his face. And the kindly man's like, I don't know him. And explains that a proper glamour requires years of practice, sacrifice, and study. And tells her to practice making faces and learn to rule her face. Like, you want to change your face? Fine, go do it in the mirror. And this idea, though, of, like, being able to rule your face and change your face at will. He's like, a smile should only come on command. It makes me really think of courtesy, right? And the politics and being able to perform in that way.
Sansa and Clash, right?
Yep.
I'm loyal to my beloved Joffrey.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, everyone else is like, all right, sure, girl. But
Arya, I mean, they should have said Sansa over here. You know, Sansa's ready. She'd be into it. She'd be like, I could win. Just kidding. Let's not send her there. She doesn't need that in her life. I don't know if she could really. I just like Sansa's an assassin. I'd worry for that girl.
Yeah. Well, I mean, her strength is being Sansa Stark and ruling her face with this very political figured face, right? Arya's is different. It's in the shadows.
Yeah. If we could just merge them, you know, if we could just...
No, they team up.
Sun and moon it. Yeah, sun and moon it.
Yeah.
The kindly man commands Arya to help other acolytes prepare corpses, which she finds actually not as hard as scrubbing steps for Weese was. So while her accent is pretty horrible, by chapter's end, she gets promoted at the House of Black and White. The kindly man says he's going to send her to sell cockles, clams, and mussels to sailors off ships for a fishmonger named Briscoe.
Yeah, in which the kindly man actually literally says, get a job.
She didn't even have to interview for this one.
Right.
She assumes the identity of Kat, an orphan of King's Landing, and leaves the House of Black and White with a long iron knife on her right hip.
I like this moment where they're like kind of brainstorming. They're like, yeah, sure, you'll be Kat. And then like the kindly man shows her how to create characters, right? He goes, your father was an ore master on the galley. When your mother died, he took you off to sea with him. Then he died as well, and his captain had no use for you, so he put you off the ship in Braavos. And what was the name of the ship? And she's the one who gets to write in that part of the characterization, says Nymeria. And it's very much, I feel like, George having a little fun and being like, this is what it's like to be a writer. You make characters and you give them this little backstory and you build off of that, but also like being a, you know, role playing or Dungeons and Dragons kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a blast that he gets to just like do a bajillion characters for Arya in this book.
Yeah,
it's definitely fun. You can tell like he's definitely done some writing exercise ideas of like, if so and so was here, how would I have them do X? Or like just to understand the characters, and that's really what this came from. He's like, ah, Arya can be anyone or no one at all, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, and like if this is the parts of your character, you have to draw from that, right? You have to be like, this is your motivation. This is what you would be like.
Fun and stuff. How you would react. And yeah, absolutely a blast.
Out in the streets of Braavos, Arya gets lost and gets curious looks and words she doesn't understand cast at her by the passerby.
Yeah, and we close the chapter with, before long, she was completely lost. Sir Gregor, she chanted as she crossed a stone bridge supported by four arches. From the center of its span, she could see the masts of ships in the Ragman's Harbor. Dunsin, Raff the Sweetling, Sir Illyn, Sir Meryn, Queen Cersei. Rain began to fall. Arya turned her face up to let the raindrops wash her cheeks, so happy she could dance. Valar Morghulis, she said. Valar Morghulis, Valar Morghulis.
Yeah. Arya at the end. I have learned nothing. Absolutely nothing. No, I'm joking, but... It's cute.
I mean, kind of, though. Like,
you know, except for the part where it's people she wants to kill, but, you know, whatever.
Except for the part she's supposed to, like, be ditching all that. Like, there's also a little bit of an inverse of, like, is there gold in the village? How many?
Ooh.
Right? Valar Morghulis. Like, she's just come to the next stage of her place of being rooted in vengeance and not in the spirit of the phrase, right? Then the chapter comes round circle completely because we start with her hatred and her prayers, and she gets told to abandon who she is, abandon her hatred, and then we end with her hatred, with her prayers, but now Valar Morghulis flavored prayer.
Yeah.
Slightly. And I said this before in Bran chapters. I feel like it belongs here too. The first adaptation of Dune to another text/movie, Star Wars. You might know it. Star Wars, the ancient Jedi texts.
Tell me a little more about... No, I'm joking. Don't tell me more about Star Wars.
Star Wars that was adapted from Frank Herbert's Dune. Yoda says, I really think I said this during a Bran chapter. I think it was about Jojen. Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. And Arya is living in her hatred. She is using her hatred to consume her and use that as a weapon to get her home, to get her anywhere, to keep her alive. That's all she has, right? I think of The Bad Show and, you know, there's that line that Father Rey says to Sandor Clegane. Father Rey in season 7, he's like, what kept you going? And Sandor's like, hate, because it can keep you going. It doesn't really nourish you. It doesn't give you nutrients, but it's like eating sawdust, you know, like, okay, well, I have something in my stomach so I can survive the night. And there's even something that kind of reminds me of like living too long in your animal, coming back to Bran and coming back to her and her dreams, right? Living in your hatred, but also living through your animal, through your warging. And kind of reminds me of Varamyr, right? A little bit of his hatred that we experience. Yeah. And his anger and injustice at the world and why me and, you know, whatever. But fuck that guy. But for Arya, like put that, but like in Arya, we like Arya. Something like that happening here too. So
yeah.
Interesting way to end it having nothing actually happened. Like she starts at the beginning, gets the whole lore and history and why she needs to be no one, and then goes back to being Arya Stark.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, it. I love the way you strung that all together. It's perfect in a book that introduces us to Doran Martell. What do you think kept him going all those years?
Hate. And vengeance, justice, fire and blood.
Yeah, and it's going to lead to a lot of suffering. There's a lot of suffering in store, unfortunately, for Doran.
For him, yeah. I'm very sad about that. But hey, it's interesting you bring him up, right? Because that's kind of what the story of the Faceless Man is, right? That they were in there with fire and blood and now vengeance and justice.
Yeah. And mercy.
And the 14 flames and mercy. Yep.
Interesting. Interesting stuff.
Well, I have had a blast with Arya's POV, but it's now over because the new POV is Cat of the Canals.
Yeah.
We will be starting Cat of the Canals, not next week if you're listening as this comes out. It'll be the week following next. Next week, we are going to bring you a treat. We are going to be giving you our Patreon bonus episode, The Mystery Night, and that is being provided by us, but thanks to patrons for letting us unlock it for the public. This has been, oh my god, when did we record The Mystery Night? I can't even remember, but it's been a while. It has been a while, and this is part of our redo of Dunkin' Egg. I guess we'll have to come back to the first Dunkin' Egg eventually, right? The Hedge Knight redo.
Because
we haven't
that.
Redone it. Yeah. Long ago in 2017, Eliana and I were together and fell in love, and we conceived this podcast one night. That night was us recording something called Drunk and Egg for Drunk A Song of Ice and Fire, and we decided to revisit it. So I think we put this out last February. It's been about a year, little over a year, and we'll be releasing this one for you.
I'm going to throw it out there. If we redo The Hedge Knight, I have no intentions of re-listening to our entire
absolutely not. Egg.
I don't need to know what...
I don't need to know that.
I don't need to know all that.
That's okay with me.
And by that, I mean I just don't want to listen to Drunk Me.
Yeah, it was 4 hours of Drunk Us that we put out. It
that's
was 8 hours
that,
of us on Skype.
Yeah, I was like,
we were in love.
That's 4 hours that were put out. Yeah.
We were bombed and in love.
Yes.
So I will never
drunk
forget that,
love.
Actually. Like, yes. I very much remember that we just sat there afterwards talking, and that was when Girls Gone Canon was conceived, everyone.
Yeah.
We were pregnant with you all and us that night.
Yes, yes.
Yep. Yeah, we actually have already put out The Sworn Sword with Joe Buckley from the Isle of Faces. He came and hanged out with us, but this one's just us, so...
Yeah,
you'll have that next week. We'll be back with Cat of the Canals. We've got a lot coming down the pipeline with a new POV, a real new POV to come. So Keep your ears and eyes unpeeled. Patrons in some of the tiers do have access to POV reveals. So I know some of you are waiting with bated breath to find out who it's going to be. Is it going to be Dany or Cersei or Tyrion or Epilogues? No one knows, but you'll find out.
Yeah. And of course, if you want to keep up with our new POV, Cat of the Canals, and the Mystery Knight and anything else that we put out, or if you have thoughts that you would like to share about oaths that you were forced to take as a child, you can let us know on social media at twitter.com/girlsgonecanon, that's C-A-N-O-N, also on Blue Sky at girlsgonecanon, or you can send us an email at girlsgonecanon, C-A-N-O-N, at gmail.com.
Of course, every episode we put out is sponsored by patrons. It's ad-free. We edit them. We do this for y'all. We love y'all. Thank you for supporting us. And our patrons actually are going to tell you where else you can find us if you haven't already subscribed and followed and all that for the actual podcast. So here they are. Thanks, all.
You can catch Girls Gone Canon on any of the following streamers.
On Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast, Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Audible, and Amazon Podcasts.
You can also join us on Patreon, where if you join the Thunder tier above, you have access to a Discord and monthly happy hours and things like that.
And by joining the Discord, you get access to a bunch of great channels, including but not limited to memes and shitposting channel, Fashion Hour. There are multiple channels for historic materials, A Song of Ice and Fire. There's a pets channel, which I think is probably the most important channel of all. Respectful Thirsting, because there's a channel for that. Come by, join the community. It's a lot of fun, and you won't regret it.
We'll be back with A Song of Ice and Fire. We'll be back with the Mystery Knight next week. Arya after that. Thanks for listening. I have been one of your hosts, Chloe.
And I've been another one of your hosts, Eliana.
No one.
Meow, 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 meow. That's the next POV. Meow, 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 meow,
meow. Bye, folks.
Or the other one, actually.
I guess so, yeah. I guess so. Bye, folks.
Bye.